With over 200 flavor notes to discover, Woodford Reserve is more than just a spirit. It's a spectacle for the senses. Toast to 150 years of the Kentucky Derby with the best bet in bourbon. Raise a glass of Woodford Reserve on this monumental celebration.
Live from State Street in the heart of Chicago, you are listening to the new home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago. And this is Carmen and Yurko, WMVP, WSHE, HD2, Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
UConn just too good. Purdue with a valiant run all the way to the championship game, but the tournament is over. And for the sixth time since 1999, boy, the new blue blood, man, the UConn Huskies, six tournament titles since 99, the first team to repeat in, what, almost 20 years, and only the third team in, like, the last 33 years to repeat as national champs of college basketball. Pretty impressive stuff out of UConn. And it's another double-digit win, Yurko. They win by 15. Every one of their tournament wins, all 12 of them the last 2 years, have been by double digits. That's a kind of dominance that you have very rarely seen, certainly in modern college basketball history, and they had the all-time best differential for a single tournament this season. Very impressive.
It used to be the Blue Bloods would go to the tournament every single year, too. Isn't that kind of the case of being a Blue Blood?
I guess. They're weird. Like, they missed the tournament or they win the championship. Right. They've had a very weird 25-year run. I mean, six titles.
So you can sit and pound your own back, and you should. You've won back-to-back championships. Congratulations. Wow. But, I mean, there can't be a void in your resume. Can't. Well, how come you didn't work these 2 years, you know? How come you didn't come to the tournament 2 years? I mean, that's
weird. You're right.
That's your question mark. That's all. If you're going to be a blue blood, you need to be in the tournament every single year, don't you?
Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. But nobody's had more success in terms of winning this tournament than UConn in the last 25 years. That's what's so impressive. But they have had some weird, you know, odd, very, like, down years post-Jim Calhoun. And then, like, that. Remember that one weird, do you remember the coach between, you know, so Calhoun won three, Hurley's won the last two. Do you remember who won the other one?
No.
He's a former Bull.
Norm Van Leer.
Not
Van Leer?
Norm and Calhoun were tight. They were like
this. Okay, there you go.
I mean, Black and Dollar, big college guys. You guys remember?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you want the answer?
Kevin Ollie.
Yeah.
Former Bull Kevin Ollie. Yurko's like, oh, yeah, that's right. Kevin Ollie won. I mean, that's how weird UConn is.
Who the hell's Kevin Ollie?
Kevin Ollie won the – he was the head coach for one of their tournaments. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
But this
team – all the credit in the world goes out to them.
This team was great.
And they're truly a team.
Yes.
Balanced team. That's what they were. I mean, Edie scored 37 last night, but nobody else could help.
No, they basically, did you get the sense, Yurk, that it was like, Edie could have 45, don't care, nobody's going to.
Not that they didn't care, but if they wanted to settle for twos, they want to play old school basketball, and nobody was going to try threes or attempt threes, so until the end of the game, did they even have 10 three-point attempts?
I think they waited way too long when they realized the way that game was going to not at least try to stretch that game out to the perimeter and make some shots.
We're willing to fight them, we're willing to combat them. I think they can get enough turnovers over the course of the game to where it would be able to balance and give them opportunities going down the other stretch. Did you count the possessions in the game? Was it a slow, methodical game, the way they like to play it? They like to move. They like to do this and that. There are two of those teams doing that yesterday.
I mean, Purdue took seven threes. That's rare in this day and age to take just seven, and they made just one of them. I mean, seven threes. You don't see that few attempts.
If I had to guess, the other team made seven or eight.
They made six. They didn't shoot it great, but they took 22 and they made six.
And they made six.
Yeah.
And already they're winning.
Six times the number of threes made.
Right, but they were winning, you know, by 5 points there. They're 5 points ahead of the other team.
Yeah.
At that point, just because they were attempting some threes.
Yep.
And they were going after it. I just thought, listen, it's great to go down to Edie. It's great to go down to Edie, but at some point, Edie's got to involve somebody else.
Yeah.
At some point, just turning and going to the basket, and I mean, he had a great game, but he also turned the ball over a couple of times.
They pretty much played it like straight up to like, okay, Edie's going to bury us maybe in the post, and he's going to score, but like we don't want three guys on him where Edie can make a pass out to a wide
open. When their big guy went out, that's when they came to double down, and that's when it was time to employ some of those guys. But
yeah.
they weren't canning anything. He really kind of had no help. There were two guys scoring for Purdue, and after that, nobody else could.
I mean, he took twice as many shots as anybody else on his team. He did play great. Yerk's right. I mean, he had 37 and 10 and two blocks in a championship game. I mean, it's great, and but it's just...
What was his effort as far as attempts and made?
15 out of 25. He was 7 of 10 from the free throw line, right at his career average. He's a 70% free throw shooter. He's a good free throw shooter for a big man. Played 39 minutes. I think the combination of all the minutes he has played, we were talking about yesterday, he's in amazing shape for a guy who's 7'4". Amazing.
Yeah, did you see Klingon go out of the game the first time, huffing and puffing on the sideline? I'm like, my God. Zach Edey looks like a marathoner compared to that
guy. He's in amazing shape. I think the combination of all the minutes he played and the talent level of Klingon being unlike probably anybody he's had to face defensively in this tournament sort of wore on him as the game went on a little bit. I just don't know what else that kid could have done.
How about number three? What was his stat line? I watched the game live happening. Nobody looked overly impressive.
No, I know.
For Purdue.
Is Braden Smith number three?
Yeah.
You want his stat line, Yurk?
Yeah.
He was shots 4 of 12.
Yeah, 4 of 12.
And he was the one who made their only three.
Right.
So just 12 shots.
He shot 60% from the field. I think everybody else on the team didn't shoot close to, 35%.
Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah, I don't know. Lawyer was 0 for 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not
good. I mean, that's your problem. You needed scoring elsewhere so they can concentrate on things elsewhere. That's what you were looking for.
Yeah.
If somebody else is a viable threat, then they've got to, then something else can possibly happen.
Meantime, that Connecticut team, like you said, just kind of spread it around. They are a team. You had a guy with 20, a guy with 15, and two guys with 11.
Yep.
They just sort of spread it around. They didn't have to.
Everybody took their turn.
Yeah.
And when you needed something special, Connecticut was there always to answer, whether it was a key three-pointer. Like, I felt like they had gotten the game down to 9. And, okay, now you're looking to solidify. Now you're looking to close it down. And then Connecticut would hit a 3. Or Connecticut would do something, force a turnover, come down and get a big bucket.
Right.
Any time it looked like Purdue was trying to build some momentum to make a comeback, it was quickly squashed right away by something, a Connecticut response.
Danny Hurley sort of hinted afterwards that he's not going anywhere, that they've got thoughts of being a dynasty, maybe, like you said, getting to the tournament every single year. I mean, UConn has had a weird 25-year history
here.
How
many guys did they lose off of this team?
Well, that's a good question. Now, they lost 3 guys to the NBA last year, 2 to the draft and 1 to a free agent, Adam Sonogo, who was with the Bulls, I think an up-down a lot of the year. They lost 3 guys off of last year's team to the NBA. Does Klingon go? I mean, Spencer's done, right? Wasn't Spencer a fifth-year senior? See, like, a lot of the guys are done now.
Does Klingon go where?
Does he go to the NBA?
If you're telling me Edey can't play in the NBA, how the hell is Klingon going to play?
I think he's projected as a top-10 pick.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people that have him in the top five.
Yeah. He's a lot quicker.
A lot quicker. He's dominated by Edey.
Well,
he was dominated by Edey. That's fair to Edey's say.
Edey's overpowering.
I was able
to overpower him. That's for sure.
The guy that overpowered him is not good enough to play in the NBA, and the guy that got overpowered is good enough to play in the NBA?
Well, here's the thing.
I don't get it.
Like, Zach Edey, he won't be able to overpower guys like that in the NBA. I think that's part of the problem. And it's just his feet are slow. He's just got slow feet.
No, I understand what you're saying. I've watched the same basketball you've watched. But all of a sudden, that guy is a top-10 pick?
I don't know. I'm not saying he'll be good.
If he's a top-10 pick, this is a 4-player NBA draft then. No, let's be honest with each other, though.
Well, I think they see his defensive abilities, especially in the earlier rounds. The ability to be near the free throw line and then to erase anything near the basket in recovery, I think that's what they see. And then, obviously, he does have some decent offensive moves as well.
I think
he's not as stiff as Edey.
I think there's some switchy things that teams might look at him, think that we can do some switchy things with him in the perimeter, and then we can play a lot of drop with him, and his recovery and ability to protect the rim. I think there's some upside there.
Pick and pop game. Bill Laimbeer, you could play pick and pop with him, and he can can a 17-footer at any time.
He was great at it.
I don't see this guy doing any of that.
No, I don't. I didn't either.
At none.
I think a lot of it's going to be based on maybe Chris had some defensive stuff.
If you told me both of these guys were going to Europe to play, I'd say okay, but one's a top-10 pick, The other guy that scored 37 and dominated him, make him look like a fool, send him to the sidelines out of breath.
Yeah.
I think it's more important if he can rim run. Yeah. So after the dribble handoff, he can then dive.
And just
and oops. It's essentially what Gobert does.
Yeah.
Gobert but can't shoot from
Gobert
the outside.
Gobert can't shoot a lick. Gobert, and listen, Gobert's weaknesses offensively have hurt his teams in the playoffs historically. Yes. They just have.
I mean, to a lesser extent, who is the player? We just talked about him for Washington. He was a former Bulls player, young Daniel Gafford.
Daniel Gafford, who's now in Dallas.
He is a pick and dive type
that's
of guy.
It. Yes. Why do you think he had a run of 33 straight made field goals?
you know, he's like, not shooting from the outside.
Basket. Yes, everything's around the basket. Yes. I think that's probably going to be an NBA team's like long-term view for Klingon. And I don't know that he's going this year or not. I mean, he's still young, but like Newton and Spencer, I think, are gone. So they'll lose some guys. Hurley sort of hinted at staying. What do we make of Danny Hurley? I mean, he can obviously coach. Like late in the game yesterday, he's got his hands on his players in the middle of a play. Like
right in front of the official.
And then you're yelling at the official? Like, come on, dude.
And like, Matt Painter's just like, what are you guys doing?
Take a Xanax.
What,
like,
you guys
calm down.
Have a meeting in the locker room? You guys want to meet with each other to figure out what you guys want to do here?
Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, at some point, when is it just show? Like, all right, Danny, we get it. You're fiery. Right. Like, what are we doing, dude? You're pushing your player on the floor in the middle of a game in which you're going to win. There's 90 seconds left. Like, calm down, man. Chill. Like, what are we doing? I don't know what to make of
Danny
Hurley.
He's not any more excitable than my guy, Bobby Knight. Back when coaches really had personality and coaches really knew and they wore their emotions on their sleeve. Yeah, I grew up in an era where the basketball coaches were almost bigger than college basketball, and they were certainly bigger than the athletes, Carm.
I know, but I think I even recall when his team was up 15 with 90 seconds left, Bob Knight sitting on the bench being like, we won this game. Like,
yeah. My problem with Hurley is that he seems to whine.
What are we doing?
He whines more about calls than his players do.
Yeah, there's like, a lot of antics.
There's a lot of, like, you think that coaches are supposed to have a decor. This dude's MFing the refs. Like, hey, like you can, I know when someone says the F word. You can read lips.
But maybe that's what he's told his kids. That's my role. My role is to argue. You guys never argue with him. Never put yourself in a position where you can get booted. I'll be the guy that puts myself out there, and I'll argue with the officials on your behalf. So maybe that's his edict that he's got to his player.
That could be. Maybe he's got a little Harbaugh in him, like just some weird eccentricities that you need to have to be a really great head
coach. He wears better pants.
He does wear better pants. There's just like a bizarreness and a weirdness about him. But hey, we embrace weird. That's all right, I guess. But like, you can't push your player in the middle of a play and then get mad at the officials when they call a technical.
You actually can't be out of the coaching box.
You can't be out of the coaching box.
And then you can't be on the court touching a player.
What are we doing?
And then the official's just looking at him going, oh, duh. Duh, like, what am I doing here?
This isn't practice. This isn't a bunch of fifth graders playing. And
if you're looking to defend the officials, call somebody else. Don't call my show today. Okay?
Did you think it was a poorly officiated game?
No, not at all. I thought they let him play.
I thought they let him play. Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic. They called a couple of fouls early. Just to let them know, okay, listen, if you guys are going to be, you guys going to be reckless, we'll call it. But I think they allowed him to play. I think there's a little more traveling going on in the college basketball game. It's not the NBA. You can't take six steps. I thought they got Edie a couple of times shuffling his feet, and they called the travel on the feet shuffling that he has a tendency to do. I thought there were three, four other cases they could have called traveling where guys just look like they got the ball in their hands and they're just shuffling their feet. Call the travel. It's the easiest call in the world to make. Do it. But I thought it was a well-officiated ball game. I thought they let him play. I thought the best team won.
Yeah.
Best team won. Right. But the best player on the court was Edie.
Yes, he was. He most certainly
Bar
was.
Bar none.
He most certainly was last Bar none. Night. If you want to react to the title game, you can ring us up at 312-332-3776. We'll get into some baseball stuff. Another adventurous, eventful day for our baseball teams. I mean, the White Sox are trending to all-time bad. The Cubs...
We're going to have fun with it.
Great and had a huge lead and blew it. We got to talk about that. I also want to play for you coming up, Pete Thamel, something he said on College Game Day about the Kentucky job and Billy Donovan. He actually led his report with Billy Donovan, but just want to fill everybody in on that, and we can discuss it a little. We'll segue to some baseball. We got football today, Jesse Rogers later on. Plus, you'll get another whiskey fact of the day, and you could qualify for Wee Whiskey Fest tickets the last of these Highlander VIP ticket packages that we have to give away. We got two pairs of these to give away at the end of the week, and you can qualify all week long. We had two qualifiers yesterday. We'll have two more today. These ticket packages are valued at like $300, so it's a really valuable ticket for the Wee Whiskey Fest up in beautiful Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, the weekend of April 19th. So details on that coming up. It's Carmen and Yurko. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. Follow the show on Twitter at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64. This is ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
Coming up here in a little bit, we'll give out the whiskey. What do we call it? The whiskey fact of the day? The whiskey quickie? The whiskey fact of the day?
Ooh, the whiskey quickie.
Whiskey quickie? The Bourbon Pursuit guys do that. They do their whiskey quickie review.
That's a good one.
It's like a 60-second review. It's great.
I got you. But you know what, Carm? I like yours. You're 2 minutes.
Do you like
and a half
that?
Minutes.
A little. Sometimes I feel like it's too long. I've been trying to truncate them or shorten them a little bit.
I've got it.
Brevity.
Got it. I mean, you give a little bit of a history on the bottle, though.
I do.
I believe is necessary. I want to know where my grain is coming from, my corn. Where's my corn? If it's dry, I want to know where the grain's coming from.
Okay.
You know, is it MGP? Is it not MGP? Who's sourcing my corn? Where's it coming from?
Look at you.
I mean, I think that's important. That's what I think what makes your Whiskey Wednesday unique.
Well, thank you.
Compared to the other guys who just take the bottle, open it up, and say, oh, this is good. What? No, give me some history. Bottle and bonded. Give me a little knowledge.
Well,
I have a thirst for knowledge. I want knowledge when it comes to my whiskey.
Thirst for knowledge and whiskey. So in a little bit here, we'll give our whiskey fact of the day. I was accused of making it just entirely too easy. Someone said to me, well, people didn't have to be listening. They could have just heard you say, you know, repeat the question. And then
they
like,
want it tougher.
Everybody knows that
these
straight
are the
bourbon whiskey has to be aged at least 2 years.
These are your bourbon snobs coming in now.
I guess.
They don't want some amateur coming in that's a Canadian whiskey drinker and or an Irish whiskey drinker coming out of the blue and getting the question correct. They don't want that.
Today's fact is a little bit more maybe not as well known. We'll put it that way. I've got an interesting little factoid
like that.
For you. That's our whiskey fact of the day coming up. And then you could qualify a little bit later in the show if you're caller 10 and 20 and you know the answer to our whiskey fact of the day, you could qualify for the Wee Whiskey Fest VIP package, the Highlander package, which is going to be great.
Oh, Highlander.
This is Pete Thamel yesterday on game day talking with Reese Davis about the Kentucky job. Take a listen here.
Well, Reese, I think you have to start with an aspirational candidate list, and at the top of that would be Billy Donovan, who's the Bulls coach. The early read there is that the answer from Donovan is expected to be the same that it's been the last half dozen years or so when college jobs have called, and Billy has said, no thanks, I'm happy in the NBA. The timing for Donovan, Reese, doesn't work well. The Bulls are in that play-in game in the NBA to get in the playoffs on April 17th. That's a long time from today if you're going to wait to talk to Billy Donovan.
I like how Thamel's like, they're in that play-in game thing for a chance to go to the playoffs. Listen to the beginning, though, real quick again.
Well, Reese, I think you have to start with an aspirational candidate list.
An aspirational candidate list, and on
aspiring.
The top of that list
aspiring,
is Billy Donovan. But Pete goes on to say that most people believe that the answer will be the same as it's been the last half decade or so, or you know, 8 years or so. If teams have inquired, college teams, big time programs have inquired, Billy has said, no, I think Billy likes the NBA at his age. I don't think he wants to go back and deal with that kind of recruiting in NIL. Who knows? Maybe in a month.
Maybe
they're announcing Billy Donovan as the coach of Kentucky. Remember, he started his coaching career there. And Billy's one of those guys that had a very impressive meteoric rise. It was a handful of years, and Billy was off to be a head coach at, I believe, Marshall, if I'm not mistaken. And then he was at Florida, and the rest is history.
I love, like, Chicago. I love the area. I love the change of seasons that we're in the midst of right now.
Do you?
I love it when it's autumnal. You still get that in Kentucky, but it's Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
It is beautiful down
Lexington
there.
Lexington is gorgeous.
You and I have been there. God. It is glorious down
it
there.
It is gorgeous.
Still get the change of seasons.
You
get the he'll probably have the angle on the best bourbon in the world.
Oh, yeah. If he likes it.
And it might be a way for him just to kind of solidify, okay, I went to the NBA, I got stuck with the Bulls, nothing great happened. right?
That's what Billy's thinking right now.
With the Bulls.
How did I end up here? This is it. I was with Sam Presti, and now this is it.
Is this as good as it gets?
This is all we've got?
Probably not. Go to Kentucky and build them into a champion that they once were. That's what you need to do. And get kids to stay more than 1 year.
That's not something that the other guy ever really wanted to do.
No, the other guy doesn't care about nobody. He's in Arkansas right now. Doing what?
I will point this out, though. The lifestyle of an NBA head coach and a college coach is wildly different now. You have to not only recruit to get kids onto your campus, but then every single day you have to recruit them to stay because of the NIL and the transfer portal. And I don't know if NBA coaches are clamoring to go back to college knowing that they have to constantly work during the season, in the off season, to recruit the kids who are already committed to your program to staying with your program.
Yeah.
I don't know. That to me seems like quite a jump. Like, I get you're pointing it out. Yeah, Kentucky is the bluest blood of all in college basketball. And I could see that being something that coaches would want to take Kentucky to a championship and be that guy. But it's like, if you're in the NBA, you don't have to deal with any of that outside stuff. Right? Like, the Bulls are not going to win, but at least you don't have to worry every single day of the year about telling and texting your players, hey, I like you. Hey, I like you. Hope you're with the program.
Right.
Hey, stay here. Hey, by the way, we like you. Hey, there's no competition at your position. Like,
I recruited you last year, but I still like you. I like you a lot. There's no competition.
Doesn't it feel like college sports for football and basketball are more of a young man's game? Who are, like, those guys are willing to do that crap.
Yeah.
Like Dan Lanning at Oregon.
Right.
Dan Hurley with the UConn Huskies. Like, it feels like the older generation, Izzo, Saban, Donovan's an older guy.
Almost 59. He's going to be 59 soon.
It's a grind in college.
It is. Is Billy Donovan the best?
It's only 40 games.
It's 40 games.
It's not 82 games.
But it's a full calendar year of recruiting.
Is Billy Donovan the best SEC coach in college basketball in the last 20 years? Or was Calipari still better in the early run at Kentucky? I think Donovan went to 8 Sweet 16s, back-to-back championships. Is it 4 Final Fours? Was he there for 4 or 3? 3 or 4 Final Fours? I mean, I could see why Kentucky fans and boosters and people would want it. I can see why Billy's name is coming up the way it's coming up right now.
To me, if I'm Billy Donovan, I can hire whoever I want to hire at Kentucky
to do those things.
And those assistants are the guys that are doing all those things. I'm coming in as the cherry on the top.
Mm.
Billy's going to have to manage his players that are there. Right now at Kentucky, it's the Wild Wild West.
Right.
Guys coming in, guys going out, coming in, going out. Right now, it's hell-bent for election. If I'm Kentucky, I want to get my basketball program back into the prominence, but I want guys that are going to stay around for a little bit of time. So I'm going to have to completely flip the crap that I just had, and I was happy to get rid of.
But even Saban was like the grind. The day-to-day grind of coaching isn't what burned him out.
Right.
The recruits want to hear from Saban. They don't want to hear from the middleman. They want to hear
players.
From the head coach.
And real players. And 80 players compared to, what, 18?
Yes.
Still, 80-18,
and something that I think must be talked about when we talk about Nick Saban. Nick Saban has probably already solidified himself as the best coach in the history of college football. He's also 14 years older than Billy Donovan. I mean, we're talking about Billy getting older. Nick Saban's in his 70s. I understand completely why Nick was probably like, what am I doing? I've made more money than I'll ever need. Me and Miss Terry, right, Adam? Miss Terry? Me and Miss Terry all the money we'll ever need. I am probably the greatest college football coach ever. I'm 72.
But for Nick, I can see where it's like, I don't need this anymore. But the recruiting process is different, where when he was in front of Congress doing this whole thing a couple weeks ago, he told the story that, you know, he hosts recruits at their house with their moms, and that's when Miss Terry comes in and talks to them about how we're going to take care of your kid and they're going to be in good hands and all that kind of stuff. And she went to him and said, why are we doing this? They only care about the check you're going to put in front of them. They don't care that we're going to motivate them.
Miss Terry gets it.
Yeah, and that's why he left them.
I can
so
see that.
You don't have to do anything. Hey, come to Kentucky where we're going to turn you into an NBA player. All kids want to know now is how much money they're going to be making.
Yeah.
That's it.
And if Billy does go, you know, we'll pivot and, you know, start as Bulls fans, even though they're people I think are sort of just like in a
they've
state
achieved
of,
nothing.
No, they've really achieved very little. You're right. And Billy's, I don't think Billy's the problem. I think Billy Donovan's a fine coach. I don't think he's great. I also don't think he's the problem.
I also told you the Popovich thing. You got to have players.
You got to have players to be a great coach.
If you don't have great players, you're not really
Popovich
a great coach.
Popovich is like the
Phil
best
Jackson,
example you're ever going to come
Phil
across.
Phil Jackson went from the greatness of the Bulls, right? And where'd he go?
To the
greatness of the Lakers, right?
Yeah. Yes. And then he tried with the Knicks, and how'd that go?
It didn't work well.
Well, he wasn't the coach. He was running
the general
Knicks,
manager.
But, like, that was a disaster.
All right, Carm, can I give you a homework assignment?
Yes, sir.
Joe Cowley just posted an article that's essentially this topic about Billy Donovan, Kentucky. During the commercial break, I want you to read it.
Okay.
And there's a nugget at the end about the White Sox that I think will really make your day. I think it's going to be nice. It's going to be good.
All right. I'm going to come in and read that in a minute. Hold on. Here, let's give everybody the whiskey fact of the day. You ready, Irk?
I am ready.
Now, I've made it a little tougher than yesterday because people were like, hey, dude, you got to make it pay for people to listen and catch the whiskey fact of the day. You can't say, oh, how much percent corn needs to be in bourbon, Carmen? Okay. All right. A little bit tougher.
A little bit tougher.
Here's your whiskey fact of the day. One of the many regulations, lots of stipulations on legally making and selling bourbon, right? Irk, must be made in America.
Right.
Must be aged and charred new American oak, virgin cask. Got to be a virgin cask.
Got to be virgins.
There's also a limit on how high you can distill because they don't want all the flavor stripped out. The more and more you distill, the closer and closer you get to just a neutral grain spirit. They, of course, don't want that. They want flavor. You cannot distill something at 190 proof like you can vodka and call it bourbon whiskey.
I got you.
What is the highest maximum
allowable
proof point that you can distill by law to legally make and sell bourbon? I will tell you what it is, and we're going to ask that question later, and all you have to do is remember what I tell you. 160 proof. You can only distill up to 160 proof, nothing more than 80% ABV.
See, this is... You're getting a little...
Well, but I can't win. No, I can't win.
I was told yesterday it was too easy.
I like it.
This is the whiskey fact of the day.
Stop letting the snobs influence you, okay? There's a great quote in the Twitch chat just now from Capitalist Czar just said, whiskey people are worse than wine people now. And this could be... Just what color's most whiskeys? Brown. Okay, fact of the day. Like, what are we doing
here? It's actually white when it comes off the still.
Yeah, I understand that, but when I get in the bottle, it's usually brown, okay?
Well, listen, I'm giving you the answer. Your whiskey fact of the day is bourbon cannot be distilled at anything more than 160 proof. That is the highest maximum allowed by law. All you got to do is remember that. Cartman said 160 proof.
That's it.
Later on, you can qualify. I'm going to go read this Sun Times article. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Working from home?
We're back in the office.
Don't miss a minute of Carmen and Yurko. Just ask your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Like Chris said, perfect timing as we've been talking about Billy Donovan potentially going to Kentucky. And it seems unlikely. His name keeps coming up, I think, because he started there. And again, he might be the most accomplished. He's certainly one of the most accomplished SEC basketball coaches of the last 20 years, and he hasn't coached in the SEC since like 2015, since he came to the NBA. He was just that good. It was seven Elite Eights, Yurko. Seven Elite Eights at Florida, including back-to-back titles.
That's getting it done.
Like, he was extremely accomplished. So I get why it's happening, but Joe Cowley writes in the Sun-Times basically what we were saying. Like, you add in, you know, he writes, I'll give you like the brief little summary here. You know, the link between Bulls coach Billy Donovan and Kentucky makes some sense. After he became a legend in Gainesville, he was an assistant coach to start with Rick Pitino at Kentucky from 89 to 94. But this is really where the rumor dies. A source told the Sun-Times Tuesday that there's been no communication from the school with Donovan in the wake of Cal's departure. Secondly, Donovan has publicly discussed the difference between the NBA and what college basketball has become since he left Florida in 2015. He has stated several times that the college game has turned completely different from what's going on in the pros, add in the transfer portal and NIL, as well as how much Donovan is valued by the current Bulls front office. The likelihood of Donovan walking away from the Bulls is minuscule. And it's not like he's being pushed out. He's got 2 years left on his deal. This is where it gets good. This is what Chris knew I was going to love. Donovan has 2 years left on his deal. And even if the front office and Bulls ownership didn't value Donovan, Chairman Jerry Reinsdorf does not like paying dead money for fired coaches. A source recently said that Reinsdorf, who is also the chairman of the White Sox, knew that manager Pedro Grifol had put in a fireable season by the middle of last summer, but he wanted to wait at least a year so the dead money wasn't as big a hit.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
Let's go, 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 White Sox! We're with you all the way!
Ripples! What a job by Cowley, just leaving that at the end of the column. I love that.
Wait, how about Cowley just like really? All right. Just kind of, let me just throw this right in here at the very end, you know.
We have to embrace the badness.
You want to embrace the bad?
There's never been a team that lost more than 120 games, has there?
There was one, and I believe it was pre-162-game season, believe it or not. It might have been the very first year the Mets were in existence.
Okay.
I will tell you that since the league went to 162 games, and we're talking 50 plus years, I think, since they did that.
At least.
55 years, maybe?
Yeah,
since the league went to 162, the all-time record for most losses in a season. And I'm going to give you the top five, but number one, Yurko?
The most losses.
The 2003 Detroit Tigers went 43-119.
Yeah.
That is the record. Now, the good news here, White Sox fans, I'm trying to paint a rosy picture, okay? The good news is, in 2006, the Tigers were in the World Series.
They were.
They lost to Albert Pujols and Tony La Russa, coincidentally enough, and the Cardinals.
That was when they had all them pitchers, though, even the one that's down there in Houston, right?
Verlander was probably a young
Bonderman.
Verlander.
Jeremy Bonderman. Yeah,
good call.
It was that cool.
Yes. So that's the all-time record, 43-119. 3 years later, they were in the World Series. The second worst of all time, Yurko, checking in at 47-115. The 2018 Baltimore Orioles. And look how good they are now.
They are good, Carm.
Just a few years later.
But they've got people identifying players there.
A tie for third at records of 50-112. Good kid.
Mm-hmm.
Last year's Oakland Athletics and the 1965 Mets, who by 1969 were winning
a World Series.
The World Series. World the 69 Series. Mets.
What are you doing to yourself?
That's right.
I
He's
got one more, Adam.
Himself.
What, are you, what are you?
Adam, I got one more. I got the creme de la creme. You ready? The fifth worst record since the league went to 162 games with a record of 51-111. The 2013 Astros, who have since won two World Series and have been in, what, seven consecutive ALCSs, I believe? I think it's seven straight ALCSs. That, what am I doing to myself, Adam? I'm a masochist.
What's the current pace? What are they on right now?
They're on pace to win like 17 games.
Is that it? 17?
That's it.
So yeah. That means they got to put together a run here.
But this is, well, listen,
they're
guys.
They're playing 110, right?
My point is, saying? We've got to embrace the bad.
They're playing 100 baseball.
We should be cheering for this
team. So what is that, 16 wins?
We should be cheering for this team to lose 120 games. If they're going to be awful, darn it, be the worst team in the history of baseball. Why not?
I've never seen anything like this. Now,
let's embrace this thing, man.
Believe it or not, it has happened. But
we're awful.
I said yesterday, who's ever heard of a team getting shut out in four of their first 10 games? They've been shut out in 40% of their games.
Yeah,
they're 1-9. They've got the worst run differential in the American League. They've scored 16 total runs. And I saw Jesse Rogers tweet from ESPN Stats and Info.
That's 1.6 a game, Carl.
Yes. That the 16 total runs, Yurko, is the fewest number of runs over a team's first 10 games since the 2004 Montreal Expos. And they had to leave Montreal. They scored just 12, if you can believe it. That's 1.2.
I think the bats are going to heat up once the weather heats up, Carm.
This is the Sox fewest number of runs scored in their first 10 games, Yurko, since 1968. You were one. I wasn't even a glint in my father's eyes. Your father's eye or your mother's eye? Which one is it?
Father's eye. A gleam in your father's eye.
In a glint, isn't it one of the two? I don't know. You're just a gleam in one and a glint in the other. I wasn't even a gleam in my father's eye.
That's when he's giving mom that look, you know, that
he wasn't giving my mom the look in 1968. No? I can tell you that much. How old was my dad? He was 19 in the Marine Corps.
Running with a dime in his hand. Bus stop to pick up a paper from my
My God in heaven, this team, all this franchise.
Well, are you going to embrace the suck with me or not?
Listen,
I'm a Padre fan. I'm in for it, man. I just want to go tailgate in a parking lot and never go into the game.
Do you know Hoodie's like interacting on Padres Facebook pages now?
Yeah.
I'm like, Hoodie, you might be taking it a little too far. I think like Hoodie's all in. He's serious.
He's
interacting on Padres Facebook pages.
That's why Jerry went in the offseason trying to get that financing before the season started.
Oh, yeah.
How are you going to pass this crap in front of anybody?
I don't know.
Well, I know what he's hoping. He's hoping that just the politicians strong arm everybody and get it voted for. He doesn't care what the citizens want.
You know, in the past, you guys have tried to put together a Carmen and Yurko day at the ballpark.
We have.
And we were kind of loosely suggesting that we have a section for each of you. We could give away tickets for each of you in a section.
Problem is,
if we have the ballpark Carmen, to each of us,
yeah,
Chris.
Why can't we do this at the 100 level?
We're going to need 20,000 people. We're going to have to contact 20,000 people to give away 100 tickets. You know that.
Well, we'll find listeners who want to come.
How many no's are going to be in that group?
Here's why I would tell you it'd be easier than you think. It'd just be a fun day to hang together. We'll get some milkshakes. We'll go see the Bertucci boys. You know, like, you know, we'll stop at Cork and Carry afterwards. Billy Guidi will, you know, throw us a round of Miller Lights.
I don't think they deserved us to even go inside of it, the park. I think we should just go pay for parking. We should tailgate, cook some food, pack up our stuff, and leave.
At some point, do you think on the south side, it'll get to like what Oakland has done here with like the paper bags on the head and waiting in the parking lot until the third inning.
I think
they're
past giving the effort to even do that.
Really?
The effort to even do that is gone.
I wonder if like we're getting there at some point.
Wow.
So, in like reading,
I mean, when your marketing campaign for the 2024 White Sox is come have our milkshakes.
Can I reread that last line, that last graph from Colley?
Yeah, do it again.
A source recently said that Reinsdorf, who's also chairman of the White Sox, knew that manager Pedro Grifol had put in a fireable season by midsummer 2023, but he wanted to wait at least a year so the dead money wasn't as big of a hit. Am I to infer that, like, by June, they're firing Grifols? Like, is that how?
Well, they're going to wait at least a year.
Yeah.
At least a year.
Yeah, from last year.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Kelly's saying midsummer last year.
Over a year past the point where he should have been fired.
So, like, in July, he'll be fired this year, maybe?
I like
when does,
this.
When does Tony come down? Go, White Sox. When does La Russa come down?
Said that in the meetings. Like, when does
Dawn of the Living Dead?
And at this point, I would embrace it.
Do you think La Russa?
Just embrace it.
La Russa went to La Russa went to Reinsdorf and said, hey, it's too cold out there now. I'll go down in June and July.
Darren, listen, my old bones can't handle it.
It's too cold.
I'm suffering from osteoporosis.
It's too cold for me.
He has to come down as like the crypt keeper.
And I'm not traveling with the team.
He has to come down as a crypt keeper.
Darren, my old body and my old bones are fragile, and I'm going to nap in the dugout. So maybe in July I'll go down and I'll start managing the team again. And give me one of those milkshakes before every game. And maybe a warm cup of milk for the side.
I'm going to embrace the
because I'm going to be cold after I drink that milkshake.
I think you guys are attacking this wrong, guys. I think we should sit there and rack up the amount of losses.
You're not
going to
watch. He won't watch.
I think we should rent a billboard, and we should put a billboard up there.
You're buying it?
Remember how you go on top of the roof or something? You stay there till the White Sox score double-digit runs?
Cap in the van. Yurko on the roof.
I'm not doing it.
On the roof.
You're
going to camp out.
Let's put you in the outfield.
Until they score double-digit runs.
You won't even stay at a game for three innings.
Stay for three innings. I mean, really. I'm not doing it. Double-digit runs, they can't score a run. I mean, let alone
trying to score runs?
Danny invited me to the suite on opening day, and I'm like, geez.
Hold on real quick. Jeff and Joliet wanted to talk about last night's basketball game. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, guys, how are you doing today?
Hey, man.
Good. What's up?
I've watched most all the UConn games this year. So a couple things where you guys were talking about Klingon. Klingon's a sophomore, so he's not going anywhere.
So is he going back?
Yeah, he's got to physically develop.
He's got to develop more. He's a sophomore. They're going to lose Newton. They're going to lose DR. They're going to lose Spencer. But they got the NBA lottery pick, Castle. He's only a freshman. They got 2 4-star recruits coming in. And they got a lot of bench on their team. So I think and 3 of their guys this year were transfers from the portal. So I'm sure they're going to probably add a few more players. So I think next year's going to be just as good. As far as the game plan last night, everybody's talking about Edie, and Edie was great, obviously.
Great.
The stud player. But the whole game plan was to let Edie get his points, just like FDU did last year's game when the 16 seed beat him. And if you watch their defense last night, they took away the three-point shot. It wasn't that they didn't make them. They took it away from them. And
yeah, I think they made it. They made it so – I think you're right, Jeff. I think they just sort of they made it so that – let Edie do what he's going to do on the block, and twos aren't going to kill us, even if he goes for 40. I think that's exactly what their game plan was, by evident in, you know, how little they even looked to attempt 4 3-point shots. Their game plan was don't entice them into going nuts, taking threes, making a bunch of them, and making this a more difficult game for us. I think that's absolutely right. Thanks for the call, Jeff. 312-332-3776. If you want to joke around about the White Sox and Yurko said, should we just embrace the suck? I mean, this is so bad. It's like they're getting – the Sox never get national attention ever. They're actually getting some, like, national attention because they're so horrific.
Yeah.
And they've mismanaged things so badly. We got to get into the Cubs from last night, too. Jesse Rogers will talk more baseball and will kind of deep dive some of the decision-making by council yesterday during the 2 o'clock hour. But we do want to talk about the Cubs blowing that 8-0 lead. I mean, they looked like they had it in cruise control before the wheels came off. What was it, in that 6th inning? I think it was the big explosive inning where the Padres got within a run. You can ring us up at 312-332-ESPN. We'll be right back.
Zoning out on that Zoom meeting? Zoom. Find out what Carmen and Yurko were talking about. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Another gorgeous day. Liking this weather. This is what I'm talking about. It's Carmen and Yurko. We will crosstalk with Waddle and Sylvie a little bit later on. Boys will be off early again today as the White Sox play game 2 of their series against the Guardians in Cleveland. Shout out for the 4th time already yesterday. Bears and Lombard. He's got a good question. What's up, Bear?
Hey, gang. Hope you're having a beautiful, wonderful day. I got a couple things. Here's my first question. Well, first statement is I hope the state of Illinois doesn't give the White Sox a nickel. They've fleeced us once already.
Amen.
Two, here's the question for you. Over, under, who wins more games this year? UConn basketball or White Sox baseball?
That is a great question, Bear. So UConn, Bear, thanks. UConn won 37 games.
37.
Now, it would take a historic season. It would take the most losses ever in a baseball season for the White Sox to not better that.
They're trending that direction.
Well, they are at some point.
They're a crochet injury away
from
having nothing.
Wow.
Isn't that right? A crochet injury away from having nothing.
Yes.
It's where you're at.
Because Montgomery's not coming up anytime soon. I don't think Ramos is either. Yeah, you're right.
Robert's gone.
Robert's gone for probably, what, 2 months?
Jimenez is gone.
Aloy, who knows? I mean, I don't, you know.
Don't worry. When he comes back, he'll come out of the box and be hurt again.
By the way, Bleck was saying, Klingon is now ranked by Jonathan Givony as the 3rd prospect. If that's the case, Donovan Klingon ain't going back for his junior year.
I don't get it.
He's going to the NBA.
It doesn't matter to me. I don't get it. I still don't get it.
You don't watch a lot of NBA, though, Yurk. I think that's part of it. Like what Chris was saying, like they'll
shortly enough.
They'll look for guys like that can just like rim run and affect shots defensively, yeah. Believe it or not. Like
when they start giving effort is when I watch the NBA. And guess what's coming up? Playoffs.
Yeah.
And guess what you get during the playoffs?
Effort.
Consistent effort.
Yeah.
Consistent effort. Effort throughout the ball game.
Coming up next, I'm going to ask you what happened to your beloved Cubs late last night. I don't know how much of that game you were watching while the NCAA game was going on.
I was watching the national championship game.
Well, I understand, but you know,
I understand the Cubs got out to an 8-0 lead.
A man of your means has the ability to watch multiple things.
They got out to an 8-0 lead, and they lost 9-8. I get that.
I want to see how much you blame Craig Counsell.
Well, how can you blame Craig Counsell? He's the best.
I can't wait for Jesse. All year, this is going to be great.
In spite of Craig Counsell's tremendous managing, they found a way to lose that game, which I'm stunned about.
Ring us up at 312-332-3776. We're back in 2 minutes.